The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, its staff, or management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on 89.3 FM WMKV. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, your nation's public radio source for what you need to know to build your financial independence through real estate investing. We're headed into the holidays here, which means a couple of things, one of which is that it's time for Cincinnati RIA's annual Best and Worst Deal of the Year meeting. That is happening tomorrow at the CAA building at the corner of Reading and Seymour. You can get more information about the meeting and how to get there by going to www.cincinnatirea.com. That's Cincinnati, R-E-I-A.com. This is an enjoyable meeting with lots of networking, a silent auction of real estate-related education, tools, products, and even a couple-of-day getaway to a lake house in Williamstown, Kentucky, for the benefit of OREA PAC and, of course, the competition for the much-coveted awards of Best Deal of the Year 2012, Worst Deal of the Year 2012, Most Creative Deal, and Best Deal by a New Investor. This meeting is, as always, open to the public. Again, more information at cincinnatirea.com or at 859 All of a sudden, I've forgotten the Cincinnati RIA phone number that I repeat every single solitary week here. But I will look it up and I'll come back to that. How about that? The holiday time also means that we are headed toward New Year's resolution time. And I know many listeners will be looking to make resolutions in regard to their real estate businesses. So today we're going to talk about not how to make the resolutions or how to keep the resolutions, but maybe some other kinds of resolutions that you might want to look at. My guest today is Tom Zeeb, who has a long, long list of achievements and things that he does, but he is perhaps best known as a successful local real estate investor in the Washington, D.C. area. I say well known because he's been on CNBC and in Kiplinger's and the Washington Post and Financial Lifeline Radio, and he's got a blog that he adds to practically every day. He is also the founder and president of Traction Real Estate Investors there in the D.C. area, and he is a big believer that one of your resolutions for 2013 ought to be to work less. Joining us from his home in D.C. is Tom Zeeb. Tom, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, Vina. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, Tom. I'm sorry, I'm adjusting my headphones here now that I'm actually hearing you talk. So when we sent out the weekly email about today's show, the title was "Can Real Estate Investors Have a 4-Hour Work Week?" And that, of course, references a best-selling book that most of the folks that you and I have met have read, and their reaction was, "Wow, that would be wonderful. Too bad it's not possible for people in real estate." So what we want to focus on today is not that number, 4 hours a week, but rather the concepts behind it, which are something that you have implemented very heavily into your life because you got a lot of stuff going on.
I do. And one of the clear distinctions I think people need to make at the beginning, because it helps them understand what kind of how can you achieve that lifestyle. It's not that you only work 4 hours, but it's a lifestyle approach, and that is the difference between a lifestyle business and an enterprise business. which style are you building? Do you want to build a big corporation that'll eventually have a lot of employees and something that maybe you can sell off? Or are you going to keep it a lifestyle business where you really focus on your ability to have choices and choice in what you do, what you spend your time on and how much time you spend with family and what types of deals that you do? That's a clear distinction. If you make that at the beginning, Vina, then it's much easier to understand when something's presented to you. Do you follow that path or not?
Mm-hmm. Now, your own personal, and I guess I should say business, is really, because you own and run what is basically a real estate association. You mm-hmm. also coach and mentor people. You
Correct.
Have a family that I know you
yes.
like to spend a lot of time on. And you're apparently in the middle of a bet with somebody about who can visit 100 countries first. So that's, I'm sure that's keeping you busy. And then there's the real estate thing on top of all of that. And there had to have been a point here at which you just made the decision to do this, because most people do not naturally come around to this idea of, rather than do more stuff and work more to make more money, I'm going to see how I can work less to make more money.
Well, you do have to turn it into a game, and I have, to a degree. It's fun to see, can you do a certain style of deals, and can you do those deals from anywhere at any time without people knowing you're gone? And one of the ways it first came to me was, there were two stories, but one in particular, that I had an attorney who had heard that I was out of town, that I was out of the country, and she backed away from doing some of the work that she was supposed to do while I was gone. Now, I didn't tell her I was gone. She heard it from somebody else. And then when I reached out and called her, she said, "Well, how did you call me? You're overseas, and your caller ID is on my phone display." I said, "Hey, I can reach out and strike from anywhere. And why isn't this done? I want to get this done by the time I get back." And I think that's one of the things I call it is, you know, people think that just because you're out of town that you must be out of touch, and it doesn't need to be that way if you just kind of reshuffle what you're doing. Now, I do focus mostly on wholesaling and some rehabbing, so those types of investing techniques do lend themselves to be able to operate remotely, because I can handle marketing and seller intake or seller calls, deal analysis. I can handle that from anywhere. And even settlements, if I need to, I can be done. I don't need to be there. I know my attorneys well enough to handle that. So you do have to choose the right type of business. And once you have that, then you can structure it in a way that you don't have to be physically present.
Mm-hmm. And, again, that is that's one of sort of the big themes in the book, The 4-Hour Work Week, which that has become one of those books that it seems like everybody in real estate has read. You know,
along with, it's a cult classic.
Yeah, it is. You know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, The E-Myth, The Millionaire Next Door, The 4-Hour Work Week, and it is so common that folks in our business do say upon finishing it, it's just a great idea, too bad it doesn't apply, right, to what we do. And
right.
And of course, one of the reasons they think it doesn't apply is because they don't see people applying it.
Right.
They don't have a path to follow in that regard. So a lot of what we're going to talk about during this program is specific ways in which you have implemented that into your life, and advice that you give to other people about how they can have more, as you say, of a lifestyle business than what they are doing right now. We need to take a quick break, but I do want to invite listeners to call with your important questions on this topic. You can call us toll free at 877-772-9658, or you can also send us an email by going to askvina@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Tom Zeeb of Traction RIA up in Washington, D.C. And the number I was blanking on for Cincinnati RIA is 859-292-7342. That's 859-292-RIA. If you want more information about the organization or about tomorrow night's meeting, the number here in the studio, if you have questions about how you can implement, let us say, a less you involved work week, give us a call at 877-772-9658 or send an email to askvina@gmail.com. And Tom, when we were talking about this program and what how much we could say in the limited amount of time that we have, we really decided that all we can do is pass on some sort of general advice in some general areas and let people sort of just put it in their brains as they are thinking about their goals, because I think a lot of times when people sit down at the beginning of the year and they set real estate goals for themselves, the first thing that happens is they get overwhelmed by the things that it is going to take to reach those goals. So I want to do 50 deals next year. Well, gosh, that means finding 50, finding the money for 50, potentially rehabbing 50, overseeing all those rehabs, selling 50. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be working 80 hours a week. And they get just overwhelmed. And we're talking too to part-time investors, because it's not bad enough that they're trying to start a new business, but they have a full-time job too. So, you know, this is applicable to everybody. You expressed that you saw several areas in which people were just sort of not thinking about, were there ways for them to do less stuff and still get the same effect? So let's talk about those areas first, and then we'll sort of dig down and talk about specific strategies within those areas.
Well, you do really have to measure your results on the results, not on the effort you put in, but what on the actual outcome is. And I see people make that mistake a lot. They think, well, you know, heck, I spend 40 hours this week working on something. Yeah, but if you could have gotten a better result from four, that would be fine. Don't measure it by the output, not by what you put in. And that trips up people a lot. And that's some of the thinking most people have. You know, you're paid by the hour, or you know, people expect you to be at an office a certain amount of time. There's always time measured rather than results measured. And that's a big kind of mind shift, a mindset shift that needs to occur to be able to realize that it's okay to not spend a lot of time on something per se, or it's okay to you know, work from somewhere else or somewhere different, or even, honestly, you know, like time of day. I'm a night owl, and I just get extremely mentally focused at about 10 p.m., and I will buzz until about 2 a.m. I get four awesome hours there. And before I admitted that and focused on that and really leveraged that highly productive time, sometimes I would struggle just in normal daytime hours. And if I can just learn to get so much done in those hours during the day, I'm that much more productive. Now, I know the morning larks out there are thinking that's absurd, but that's fine. They can work in the morning and get the same amount done. Find out what time it is for you that's best, and then really, really work hard to isolate that time for you and for your, make those your productive hours.
Mm-hmm. And let me add to that I discovered about 10 years ago that anything that I needed to do that involved a lot of brain power, you know, writing marketing or composing a creative deal, okay, if I did that before noon, it was going to turn out better than if I did it afternoon. Now, it's not like afternoon I can't work or anything, but shuffling, understanding when you are most able to work on things that require a lot of thought or things that require a lot of physical activity, and shoveling those things into that part of the day each day can be very helpful too. I've sat down to write e-letters at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and rewritten the first sentence 18 times, you know, because it's not my creative time of day. Where if I sit down at 8 o'clock in the morning and do it, all just comes out in one 20-minute spurt. So understanding that sort of thing can be very helpful as well. So, all right, getting over the idea that I used to work 9 to 5 and so I should work 9 to 5.
It's leverage the time that you're in the zone, and that's going to be a little bit different for everyone. But you probably have a natural sense about it. Just maybe no one's ever stopped you and asked you before, or no one's ever said, "Hey, you know, what are your good hours? When are you in the zone?" Mm-hmm. And then leverage the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find particularly convenient when traveling. And you know, that's one of my number one passions is to travel and go places, and to understand that if I'm somewhere else, but I can still isolate some time during the time that I'm in the zone. That's how I can get so much done every day, because I'm extremely focused. Doesn't matter where I am. And so it's a matter of, if you were able to, if you're able to disappear, you know, for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks on a trip, but all you had to do was sacrifice an hour a day, would you do it? Well, of course, most people would. And so the hour that you need to sacrifice then is an hour in your zone. That way you're maximizing the time. Because if you can get three times the amount of work done just because it's the right time of day, then that's really important. And I kind of took this idea to the max a few years back. We did a honeymoon, and it was an around-the-world honeymoon where you literally circumnavigate the globe. You travel, and we went away for 5 weeks. And during that time, I put together two deals, and they closed when I got back. And it was just a great, you know, not a bad honeymoon. We spent a lot on that trip, but we made a lot. We made $33,183, and that was across two deals. The first deal was 15, and then the balance of that was from the second deal. And it was just an absolutely awesome feeling to know you did that from just a small laptop, a smartphone, and a little bit of time each day to just keep up, you know, keep up on things. Not, it wasn't obsessive. It certainly didn't take away from any of the fun and enjoyment we're having. But learning to leverage it right and focusing on the fact that, you know, it's a life, it's lifestyle first, and build a business around that, rather than having a business and then trying to, you know, stick some lifestyle in.
Now, another thing that you're big on is looking for things that you are doing over and over again, and finding a way to automate those things. And I kind of know what you're talking about here, because these are, I think these fall into the category of, oh, it's only going to take me a minute. But then you do it 17
Famous
times a week.
That's a lot of minutes.
Exactly. So give us an example of the specific kinds of things you're talking about there, and what you mean when you say automate it.
Sure. Well, this would be a great tip for people, too, because they can implement it immediately. But, if, for example, do you have things that you write all the time, or standard responses that you have to, let's say, to motivated sellers, and you, then you find out they're not that motivated? How do you turn them down, or how do you refer them to a realtor, or how do you handle things that you do on a routine basis? I have pre-written all of that, and rather than write it every time, I save it as auto text. Now, I know there's a lot of different programs out there. I use Outlook for email. I know people use Gmail and Yahoo and whatnot. But most of them have a way of having like a standard auto text, or a set amount of text that you reuse every time. And so I even have it to keyboard shortcuts. So I just hit like two keys that would, you know, like caret Q. And then it, boom, it expands into exactly what I need it to say. And I have it, so it's basically my own shorthand, and then it expands on the screen into that entire paragraph, that entire sentence, or that entire thought. Because if it's stuff I say all the time anyway, why do I need to retype it each and every time? That amount of savings every day adds up massively.
And that's closely related to another thing that I know that you have implemented massively in your life, which is technological solutions to things that can be done manually, but maybe shouldn't be.
There are, you know, people find themselves, again, you know, doing a number of things sometimes just because they've always done it that way. But if it's anything that's remotely repetitive, you can get some aspect of your computer to do it, or your smartphone. But I think the key, Vina, is to make sure that it's not the technology isn't wagging the, you know, the productivity dog. It's the other way around. You don't want to be doing something just because you can do it on a smartphone. There's all these new shiny objects out there, and there's always a new website or a new system or a new phone. I think it's really a matter of boiling it down to what are the basics and sticking with those, and don't worry about what's shiny and new, because the technology changes, about every 6 minutes. You know, every week you can buy a new version of something, but that's not what's important. It's getting those fundamentals down so that you understand how to systematize every aspect of your life.
And, you know, it's interesting about technology. I mean, just as simple as having a laptop, having a cell phone, having possibly a Google Voice number that is a different number than your cell phone because it's your personal cell phone, but you want a business number, that sort of thing, is that with a lot of part-time investors, they worry about credibility. Mm-hmm. They worry that a seller is going to want to work with somebody who's buying 100 deals a year, and you know, here I'm buying two. Or they worry that a tenant is going to want to work with a great big management company with, you know, 17 people on staff, and here it's just me. And if you set those things up right, no one knows you're not a 20-story company.
No one knows the difference. I use a mailbox service that, you know, so I have a physical street address and a suite number, so that, you know, that looks much better than I think just a standard post office box. Phone numbers the same way. You can get a phone number and just pass it through very easily online. I know it sounds complicated, but you basically set up a number. It's almost a virtual number. And then you log into a website and you tell the system what to do when that phone number rings, and you can route it any number which way. So you could route it to your cell phone and yet at the same time not actually have to give out your cell phone number. And you can choose a number that looks like a business number. You know, a lot of business numbers have, you know, multiple zeros in them, or they tend to be even numbers or something to that effect. And you can do that very easily. You can present the face that maybe you're bigger than you actually are. And it's not that you're out to deceive anyone. It's just that it's a trust factor. And honestly, if that still bothers you, you are bigger than you think you are, and you do represent more people than you think. That's the benefit of your local Real Estate Investors Association, is that you do work with a large group of local investors in your area, and you should take advantage of that and promote that, because it's good credibility for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, very true. Time for another quick break. I do want to let listeners know, once again, you can reach us with any questions at 877-772-9658 or via email at askvina@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Tom Zeeb from TractionRIA.com. We're talking about a different way to think about your New Year's resolutions, or perhaps a different framework in which to put them, so that you don't write down a list of things you want to do and then get so overwhelmed by what that will require that you stop in your tracks. And it's not February when your resolutions are broken, it's January 3rd. So, Tom, I just got an email, and I should give out our email address again. It's askvina@gmail.com. That's ASKV like in Victor, ENA @gmail.com. You can also call us with your questions at 877-772-9658. This question is from Ron in Atlanta, and I think this is fairly typical of the kind of process we're talking about having to go through. Ron says, I am one of the people that you mentioned with a JOB. The major problem that I am running into right now is I cannot take calls from sellers at my job. So what happens is I get calls from sellers during the day. I return them on my way home from work. Then I have to run comps on the properties and call the sellers back. All of this work means it is often 2 to 3 days before I can get back to a seller. Any suggestions about how to make this more automated or spend less time on it?
No, it's an excellent question, and I know a lot of people come across that frustration. They come up against that, and they're looking for ways to handle it. One way could be if you're not allowed to take calls during the day, or if there's also no convenient time to return a call during the day, you can consider having a call center or a virtual assistant. Virtual assistant is like a virtual secretary. Answer those calls for you and go through an initial script that you write for them. Get the salient information from the sellers. And if you had all of that, then you'd be able to look at it quickly and determine whether or not maybe you need to take a break and try to return a call, or if it can wait until later. And then you'll develop that system further by realizing, well, if you can make that quick distinction, then so could your virtual assistant, and they could be weeding out the ones that you don't, you know, the ones that have no use to you. If someone calls, they want full price and no fancy terms. That's not usually a great deal for an investor. So you would have them go through a process of just referring that over to an agent, or just telling them gently that it's not the right deal for you. You can have all of that automated when you go through and start to think about what the system is. So I would encourage Ron to look into either a call center, a 24-hour call center, so he just doesn't have to worry about answering the phone. All the information would be collected and it would be emailed to him, or he could do it with a virtual assistant as well. And the benefit also of the virtual assistant is then they could do other tasks for you. So any kind of I don't want to say menial tasks, but any repetitive tasks that you're not interested in, someone else, like a virtual assistant, is usually very happy to do those tasks on your behalf because that's exactly the kind of work they actually enjoy doing. And then you have a system in place to handle everything.
And Ron, I'll bet you $10 you're comping properties using the internet. So
yeah.
There's probably
someone else could comp it.
There's probably a set of steps you're going through over and over and over again with that. And yeah, somebody like a virtual assistant can't make a determination for you about what the value of the property is, but why couldn't they pull the data and email it to you the same way they would be emailing the script? So now before you pack up to go home from work, you not only have what did the seller say, but also what are the comps on his property, and you can probably have a more meaningful discussion with him about what you might be willing to pay for the property. But Tom, this really is a change in mindset. I know I keep going back to this and pounding on it, so do you. Having to think about questions like, what makes me know that a seller is not motivated and that I don't need to run comps? it doesn't matter what the property is worth. They're not going to sell it to me for less than that. And if you can come up with key questions like that, someone else can ask them. And, you know, maybe, Ron, for you, the key questions are, when do you need to sell? What's going to happen if you don't sell by then? What are you willing to take for a quick cash offer? And, you know, why are you selling? It could be a set of three or four questions that it really boils down to. And the answers to those questions are going to determine whether you need to spend all this other time. Because I don't know about you, Tom, but it sounds to me like Ron is running comps on every single call, not just the ones that would deserve deserve to take that extra step.
Correct. And elimination, the whole concept of eliminating things you don't need in general and that you don't need to be doing yourself, is a key concept. And so what if Ron had a virtual assistant to take those calls, process the initial information, run some brief comps? I'm not saying they're going to be perfect, but what if it's enough to determine whether or not this thing even has a remote chance? And if that was emailed to him, then, I mean, when he walks out of work, he could be looking at that executive summary that's been presented to him. You know, he could be looking at that on his smartphone and decide whether or not he needs to make the call immediately from the parking lot or if it could wait an hour until he gets home. But it's having those systems together. And Vinny, you bring up an excellent point, because when you take the time, and it does take just a little bit of time at the beginning, but when you actually take that time and examine your business and try to break it down into its logical steps, you can determine which steps could be outsourced. Well, the process of going through that makes you infinitely better at what you're doing. And you'll realize all the things that you can delegate out. But you're not gonna figure those out until you take the time to really think through your business step by step. So it's a very beneficial exercise to be doing anyway. And that's why I encourage everyone to actually sit down and do it.
Again, very different mindset. And if you don't take that sort of step, you just find yourself working really, 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 really hard and maybe getting the same results that you would get if you worked a lot less hard and eliminated some things and automated some things. Question from Steve in Dayton, and I guess I should have predicted this one. He says, forgive me because I came into the show about 5 minutes late, but Tom was saying something about basing what you're doing on measurable results. The problem is I am a new investor, so I am never sure when I embark on a particular project such as a marketing campaign what the measurable results are going to be until after I am finished with it. Any suggestions?
Well, your results can certainly improve over time. So you could do your first round of marketing, see what your results were, and then aim to beat it. You also know what some of the industry averages are, and that's actually, unfortunately, not very high. You know, you're only expecting maybe a 1% response rate. So that would mean, you got to figure out what that means. That's one out of every 100 will respond. And the inverse of that means 99 of your postcards got thrown in the trash, or 99 of your letters got thrown in the trash without anyone taking any action. So you can aim to beat that 1% number at the very least and say, I'm going to do something unique and different, and I'm going to stand out like a sore thumb from everything else, and I'm going to really, really encourage people to contact me. And then if you get a 2% rate, you know you're doing really good. So you can certainly start with the baseline numbers industry-wide, and then always aim to beat your own numbers.
Mm-hmm. And sort of tagging on to Steve's question there, new investors can get overwhelmed by, and experienced investors can find themselves still doing things that are not necessarily all that high leverage. And that you know, in a perfect world, should they all be done? Yes. But in reality, is it making that big a difference in your business? Maybe not. And new investors often can't sort out what those are. I mean, how often have you talked to one of your coaching students and 2 weeks later, what they have accomplished is they have the perfect business card? They haven't done a mail campaign. They haven't talked to any buyers or sellers, but by golly, they have spent 2 weeks creating the perfect business card. Just sort of out of, someone said they should have business cards, right? And they don't always sit down and look at all of the things that could be done and then just try and think for themselves, what is higher leverage, a business card or a postcard that's going to actually go out to people who might want to sell their houses as opposed to be in my wallet all the time? Sitting down and doing what you mentioned a little bit earlier, which is thinking through what are the tasks that have to happen to make my business run, from the point of view of, and if I could only do three of those today, if I could only do three of those this whole week because my time is so limited, which three are most likely to get me closer to where I want to be? I think could be a really important question.
Yeah, you have to learn to prioritize, and you have to be careful to not fall in the trap that you're just trying to reduce the size of your to-do list. You know, say you have 12 items on there, you know, hey, I can knock out six of them, but if those are the six least important tasks, that's not really good. You really have to prioritize them and then start at the top and work your way down. Mm-hmm. What is that number one task that has to be done, has to be worked on? And that's, there's a little bit of self-discipline involved in getting there. And if you have problems with self-discipline, I personally find, and I know some people dread the word, but I personally find there's no better way than having a deadline. A real deadline, not one that you can, you know, kind of move around, but commit to somebody or commit to something, commit to having it done by a specific date, and then you will watch the items in your to-do list start to get checked off because you're working towards a deadline that you've set and that you've found a way to enforce.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that is just as big a lesson for folks who've been around for years and doing things the same way for years. Is from time to time reevaluate how much of this stuff is the 20%. You know, what amongst this is really getting me results, and what amongst them I just kind of doing it because I've always done it that way. And if this mail campaign went away, or this tenant contact went away, or this form of advertising for rentals went away, it actually wouldn't do anything except save me time. You know, I might miss one lead a month, but I would also be saving 2 hours a month that I could maybe do something more valuable with.
And you have to look for those opportunities, spot them, and then if you're still nervous about it or you think it's going to make a difference, then trick yourself into doing it by just testing and say, you know what, I'm going to drop that for 2 weeks, and then we'll see if the world falls apart. And 2 weeks will go by, the world doesn't fall apart, you may realize that you were wasting your time on it from the get-go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very, very good point. Again, askvina@gmail.com is one way to contact us if you have questions. Another way is to call at 877-772-9658. Now, Tom, I've kind of, you touched on this earlier, this idea of outsourcing and delegating. And I don't want to say I've been avoiding getting to it, but I have been every time that topic comes up here on Real Life Real Estate, we get a bunch of people who say, but I don't have the money. I can't hire people. I work alone. I don't have people I can delegate to. My children are 3 years old, so it's a little tough to make them do real estate related stuff. How do you respond to that kind of seemingly very practical objection?
Well, there are, and that's why it starts with you. You need to figure out the tasks that you want to have done. And I have sat down, and Vina, admittedly, it was a little painful at the beginning, to sit down and every task to write out a protocol of how it's done. And I mean, like, clinically write it out. Click here, type this in this box, click the button labeled submit. I mean, so simple that a monkey can do it, right? Monkeys put the first rockets into space, and all, you know, something lit up, they pressed the button. Something made a buzzing noise, they flipped the switch. You almost need to make it that easy, because when you do, it does make outsourcing it to somebody a lot easier, because you don't need a high degree of skill. You can find someone reasonable, and if they don't work out, that happens sometimes, then you can easily move on, and you haven't lost anything, because your training time was minimal, because all they were doing was following a very clinically laid out protocol that you put together. The benefit then to doing that too is, if anything ever happens to everybody you come across, you still know exactly what to do. And even if it's tasks that you're doing, I still follow protocol for tasks I know like the back of my hand, because I want to go through the checklist and make sure I don't miss anything. It also means I don't have to think about that task. So I can just breeze through that task and know that it's done consistently every time, because I don't have to think about it. Therefore, I'm not going to miss a step. It also keeps me more relaxed, keeps me moving a lot faster, and then I can easily give those assignments to someone else. And so, yeah, you might have to screen a little bit on a virtual assistant, but you'll have a good sense of someone who can follow simple directions. And you'll have that sense, particularly if you just add some simple instructions to the interview process. So if you advertise out there, you have them do, you know, one, two, or three things that you want them to contact you in a certain way or present a resume in a certain fashion. And if they can't follow those simple steps, they're not going to be able to follow any other of the simple steps you give them. So you would eliminate them right from the beginning. But when you have people that come through your screening process and they do exactly what they were told, that's probably a good sign that same person is going to do exactly what you tell them to do in the future. So that's a nice greeting tip for working with virtual assistants.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We're going to take a quick break, and then your calls and questions at 877-772-9658 or at askvina@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today, Tom Zeeb from Traction RIA. We're talking about a different way to think about all the stuff that you are doing or determined to do in the new year, and that is, how can you do less and get the same or better results? And we've talked about the concept of really looking at things and deciding what could maybe be eliminated altogether without having too much of an effect on what you're doing. We've talked about automating to the extent that you possibly can. And we're talking about delegating and outsourcing. And again, it's so common that when this topic comes up, people say, well, I can't afford it. And I can't afford staff. I only do just so many deals. And of course, often the nature of the real estate business is feast and famine. You know, this week you close a deal, next 2 weeks you don't. So how do I pay somebody in those 2 weeks that I'm not closing a deal? And Tom, you've mentioned virtual assistants several times, and for those folks who might be listening and are not familiar with that term, virtual assistants for administrative type, repeated, very systematizable things are incredibly cheap. Like $1.50 an hour is not an uncommon pay rate for an overseas virtual assistant who's doing something like entering data into a database or something like that.
And you're only paying for the hours that you actually use them. They're not a full-time employee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key point as well.
And there's not the complications of withholding or withholding on payroll or having to have office space for them or even really firing them if they're not doing a good job. You fire them by going into the website and ending their contract, and that's pretty much it. So in some of these cases, we're just talking about very small dollars. And I always recommend to people when they've got stuff that sits around on their to-do list for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and never gets touched because there's not time, figure out how somebody could do that for you for, you know, $30 or $50, and then it's done. It's not it's not hanging around there on the edges of your brain being one of those many things that isn't finished. And if it's important and it helps you move on with your business, that's probably a good investment of a very small amount of money. Now, beyond that, there are folks like Ron who need more consistent help. They don't need somebody to go and create a PDF for them that they've been meaning to do, or you know, put together a mailing list out of the tax rolls or something that they've been meaning to do. They need every day somebody to be answering the phone for them and so on. And I think the question you reference this, but I want to actually discuss it. The idea that the time they free up should be making you more money than what they're costing you.
Yes, absolutely. If you're only paying, I mean, the overseas virtual assistants being very cheap, but even if you use a domestic-based one and were paying more, I mean, if you were paying $10, $15 an hour, you should be able to free up time that's more valuable than that. And so you have to understand, what is your time worth? If your time is worth $30 an hour and you can pay someone $15 to get rid of your minuscule task, your small task that you don't want to do, then you have the potential to go out and make twice as much. So you'd still be, you're still making double. So it is just a different way of thinking about it. And I know people struggle with that at times, but start small. Mm-hmm. Start small and test yourself again. It would be the same advice I gave before. And that's say, all right, you know what? I'm going to try this for a month. I'm going to see how it works. And chances are you'll get addicted. I had a friend push me into it was when I finally got a virtual assistant early on, and then I never looked back, and I was thankful that I just needed that little nudge. So I'm trying to give everyone that little nudge and say, just do it. You know, you don't have to say, hey, it's forever. Just say, I'm going to try this for a month, and you'll be hooked.
And again, a virtual assistant is a good first step. Ultimately, you might actually want to have in-office staff. I know in some of your businesses, you do have people who are at least geographically close to you that are doing things for you. But with a virtual assistant, it's very easy to have a conversation up front that says, I'm going to try this for a month. And it's not like hiring somebody full time and saying, oh, yeah, you know what, this job might be over in a month. Virtual assistants tend to work for a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tom and I might have the same VA and we wouldn't know it. Because
correct.
She's sitting someplace in Kansas City answering phones for three or four different companies. So it's not nearly as big a deal to them. And oftentimes, if you have any numbers on your business, if you can say, I make this much on the average on a wholesale deal, or I make this much cash flow average on a new rental I'm acquiring, you can even run some numbers up front and say, if I saved myself 4 hours a month with this, how many more deals would I do over the course of months, and would that pay for this?
That's the way you have to look at it. And you have to see what the savings is and the time benefit to you, because there's a big factor there. And that's one of the other kind of central tenets of the way I operate. And you gave a wonderful list before, at the opening of this segment. And I would add to that consolidation. You need to learn to consolidate. And a virtual assistant can help you with that. But you need to look. Sometimes people just need to get simple, have one centralized collection system. I have people, they have two different phones, three different computers, a pile of papers, different filing cabinets. It's ridiculous. You need to bring it all into line and try to do everything through one centralized point. For example, I was always really bad at responding to voicemails that were left on my cell phone because they were out of sight, out of mind. So now I turn it off. I don't even use my cell phone voicemail. If something is supposed to go to my cell phone, it gets pulled back, and it's the recording of that message is emailed to me. So the system I use pulls it back. All my voicemails are now emailed to me, so they're in my centralized collection system. That's why I live in my inbox. I manage all my to-dos in my inbox. So even my voicemails, if I think of a to-do, I email myself. If someone emails me something and it's a task that needs to be done, it's in my inbox. And so I manage that inbox, and my goal is always to empty that out. But keeping it all in that one centralized collection system makes such a big difference. So if I need to give something to a virtual assistant, I delegate it out of the inbox. When the response comes back, it's back in the inbox. If a voicemail comes, it's in the inbox. And, everything, that one centralized collection point makes my life so much easier. And people wonder, how can you handle all that, and how can you manage all that with minimal staff, which is basically just virtual assistant? You can do it when you keep it all in one spot. It simplifies your life. It simplifies everything you're doing, and it makes it easier to see what needs to be eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and as you mentioned when we talked a little bit about technology, people do chase the shiny things, and I've met real estate investors who have their buyer's database in one system and their seller contact lists in another system and their rental management stuff in another system, and just to get their own basic numbers they have to open up like 8 computer programs that don't talk to each other.
And they wonder why they have no time left.
Yes, so sort of trying to as much as possible, keep things in a system that works for you. And, it, you know, for other folks, it might not be everything's in my inbox. It might be everything's in, you know, some other system, some other note-keeping system. Or I even know people who do very, very well with the yellow pads.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all in one place is the important thing. So the takeaways for today are eliminate, automate, delegate, and consolidate. So you folks who are on your way towards your 2013 goals, take a second look at them and say, how can I use these basic ideas to make my 2013 not only more profitable, but more fun for me? Tom Z from TractionRia.com, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing some of your tips on having a better lifestyle in the real estate business. We will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.